Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Wednesday, December the 24th, 2025. 12/24/25, Merry Christmas Eve to everybody listening out there with their families and friends, and maybe even some people doing their last-minute Christmas shopping. Just about 13 minutes past the hour here at WGH Talk Radio. We have got a great morning ahead of us, and we're going to open up in the first hour with one of my favorite people. And this is kind of apt that we are doing this on Christmas Eve, because as I've said during this holiday season, I think it's important to visit with people who seem like family and friends to you. They may not live in the same zip code with you. You may not talk on the phone with them all the time. You may not exchange Christmas cards, but they are important people in your life. You always enjoy talking with them, and many of the guests on this program certainly fit that bill. So what better way to kick off your Christmas Eve morning than with a man, I know he doesn't like the title, but he is a legendary newsman in the world of news, and with the things that have been going on in news lately, he certainly fits that bill. He covered Richard Nixon, he covered Bill Clinton, he covered Ronald Reagan. He has been in Washington for a long, long time and hosted many successful primetime news programs, as well as the very popular This Week with Sam and Cokie for many years. What a pleasure it is on this Christmas Eve morning to welcome to these microphones for the first hour somebody I feel like as family, Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, good morning, Scott. You know, right now, at my age of 92, I just lie under the covers. don't watch the passing parade. But we're in a wonderful period this month. We've just finished Hanukkah Shemesh. And now we're coming on Christmas. Merry Christmas. And I think of myself, to myself, if the world could simply follow the admonitions of those two great religions and many other religions, and if people would really abide by, for instance, the teachings of Jesus Christ, we'd have no wars, we'd have no divisions, we'd not hate each other. I mean, judge not that ye be not judged, said Christ. Okay, fine. And forgive not 7, but 70 times 7, said Christ. Okay. And, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I'm going to tell you, Scott, when you think about it, if the people who really mouth those sayings and say they believe them, practice them, and I'm as much of a backslider as anyone else, so I'm not pointing a finger at other people, we'd have a wonderful world, period.
You know, Sam, that's very interesting. What is it about that? We obviously are a country that has a lot of religion, and certainly nothing wrong with that. But yet, we have always been a very warlike country, and not even necessarily war. Sometimes we don't get along with our neighbors. We don't get along with the people in our neighborhood. We're not always the best at practicing those virtues that those religions profess.
Well, we're human beings, and human nature, simply for the many, many thousands of years that I look at the way people have studied it, it remains basically the same, unfortunately. That's one of the reasons to become secular here, why communism doesn't work. Sounds like a great theory. Everyone gets an equal number. Everyone gets half an acre. No, I want three-quarters of an acre. And it's not going to work. Now, capitalism does work when properly regulated and well regulated, because capitalism says, okay, Sam, if you want three-quarters of an acre, work for it. Earn it. Do it. We'll allow you to do it. We'll have laws which will allow you to rise. I mean, you started as a poor boy on a farm in southern New Mexico during the middle of the Depression, and you can, if you're lucky, and if you work hard, maybe make something a little more of your life. So that's why capitalism is better than communism. But it's human nature, Scott. Trying to perfect it is just beyond my reach.
Mm. Sam, here on Christmas Eve morning, before we get to the news of the day, and heaven knows there is a lot of news going on even on Christmas Eve, I wanted to talk about those Christmases as a poor boy during the Depression when you were younger. What were those like?
Well, I have to be very honest when I say poor boy. My father, who was deceased at that point, had a small farm in southern New Mexico. It was small. But we had enough to eat. We raised a lot of our own food as I was growing up. Electricity finally came, thanks to Franklin Roosevelt and the Rural Electrification Association. So when I talk about the Depression, I was spared the kinds of hardships that so many millions of Americans had to go through. But we were not rich. That's my only point. And it was a wonderful time. I mean, I remember Christmas Eve. Santa Claus was coming. And one Christmas, I sort of caught my mother distributing gifts under the tree, and I began to think, is she Santa Claus? But I don't want to get into that, because some children are listening. Don't worry, kids. If my mother's not here anymore, it's going to be Santa Claus. But I was spared a lot of the problems that people today have. Yes, we'll get into the news, whatever you want. We have so many things we could cover. Well, for instance, 22 million people on the 1st of January will lose their Affordable Care Act health subsidies, and many of them will not be able to pay higher, and I don't mean just a few dollars higher, the skyrocketing subsidies. So what do we do with them? Do we do what Scrooge suggested? Have they no poor house? Is there no workhouse? Is there a prison? Well, Congress somehow was unable to decide that we should do anything with them except let those subsidies expire. And good luck, boys and girls. Now, I'm being very cruel in my language, and I don't mean to be. There are many facets of this problem and many sides of why it has occurred. But the fact is, for 22 million people, it has occurred.
Hmm. I want to get to that momentarily, but I want to touch on one more Christmas thing here, Sam. The Christmases when you were working in Washington, covering the presidents, and also doing the great news programs, Christmases you spent in New York, what are your memories of those as an adult?
Well, the Christmas in Washington, of course, when I was a reporter there, and a political reporter covering officials who had been elected by the people, including the President of the United States, was very special. The White House was always decorated in normal, what I would call, Christmas decorations, and then the green trees and all of this. Now, as you know, President Trump has put gold everywhere, the color gold. I don't mean he had actually papered the walls with real gold, but it's all golden. In the Oval Office, it's all pictures of former presidents, and some of them he didn't like, particularly Joseph Biden, is depicted in a cruel and non-Christian way. But that's the White House today. I can remember the White House and Nancy Reagan, of course, with Santa Claus. I've forgotten what figure. I was not Santa Claus, but someone played Santa Claus. And in those periods then, and I think elsewhere too, the enmities and the dislikes that we had for people of any sort sort of evaporated. I'll just give you a little personal one. In 1968, when George Wallace, the governor of Alabama, was running again for the presidential primary and of his own party, he stole film that my cameraman had made of him and shaking hands with the leader of the Ku Klux Klan in the South. Now, Wallace didn't realize that the line of people waiting to shake his hand included this guy. It was a little surprise to him, but the fact that he was pictured doing it had his troopers take the camera of my cameraman off his shoulder, rip the film out. I said, let's leave. I think maybe the crowd doesn't know what's happening, but it knows which side it's on, but it figures it out. And so it did, and it was quite a story and what have you. Years later, toward the end of his life, when he was no longer governor of Alabama, and it was just happened to be at Christmas time, I was covering Bob Dole briefly when he was going to the House looking for the nomination of his party, which he did eventually get to be president of the United States. And Wallace, who was in a wheelchair then, spied me and came over, wheeled over. Sam, I said, oh, yes, Governor, nice to see you, nice to see you. He said, I just want to tell you something. I'm very sorry that we stole your film. I shouldn't have done it. I said, well, Governor, that's okay. I mean, those times were what they were. And I don't hold a grudge. That's fine. Well, that was a moment that only a Christmas could have provided on either side. And so I remember it very well and tried to tell you about it.
That is a wonderful Christmas story. That is a great Christmas story for people who remember George
Absolutely
Wallace.
True.
Oh, my gosh, what a story. You know, Sam, what is it, I think only second probably to New York City, what is it about Washington, D.C. and the decorations and the tree at Christmas time that make it come alive so well?
Well, it's our capital. It's the seat of our government. It was not ever people storming the building, as they did a couple of years ago, an attempt to find people like the Vice President of the United States to perhaps kill him. Washington was not that way. Pennsylvania Avenue was open. It was closed for security reasons, and I think the reasons are very valid. But one could walk up and down just right outside the White House fence and gate and look in. On, if they were not invited, they didn't get in, but look in on it. And again, I think in Washington, in those days, the political enmities, which were not enmities of hatred, but enmities of difference of opinion on how much taxes we should have on this problem or another, sort of were forgotten. I would go to parties in which you would see Republicans or Democrats that you knew because of their different views on the floor of the Senate and the floor of the House and votes didn't agree with each other, but, you know, talking, slapping each other in the back. There's something about a holiday like Christmas, again, following the lead of Jesus Christ and his teachings that softens the dislikes and softens the problems. You know, the problems never go away, as you and I'll talk about in a minute, but I can't describe it any better than that, although I'll say this. I've been in other towns at Christmas, and so if you, where you live, Scott, and I'm sure the stories that I've told about the enmities being softened are true there also. We have not always had what we have in this country today. Yes, we had the Civil War, and we've had divisions that were very strong since. But today's division is so strong that it's possible to think, well, we're never going to come back. Well, I disagree. We are coming back now, in my view. I think the table has now tilted toward once again being unified as a country.
What do you think has tilted that table, Sam?
Public opinion. And what then, Scott says to me, what has driven public opinion? Well, maybe the price of bread. Maybe the idea that two men floating in the ocean having had their boat, perhaps the boat contained drugs, blown up, that they themselves were attacked and blown up. And maybe that's not right. And the fact that none of us wants to say our borders should be open and people should not come across illegally. They should not. I'm in that camp. But how do you fix the problem? Do you round up mothers, children? Do you round up fathers who've been in the country paying taxes on good jobs that are needed in our society? And do you take them as if they were criminals deluxe away? I mean, what's happening in the country is now being reversed. And if we get to it, I'm sure we will. I'll give you my view as why I can say that. By public opinion that says, wait a moment. Now, let me just give you, jump the gun here, give you one there. The United States Supreme Court, which clearly this year has almost always favored President Trump's views of what he, as the chief executive, has the power to do, has suddenly said to him, "No, you don't. You can't send National Guard people into Chicago for law enforcement problems unless it's so extreme that it's so obvious." Now, Trump can say, it's a cesspool of criminality. I mean, that's not true. And the Supreme Court has said to him, "You can't do it."
You know, Sam, and that's an interesting point. President Trump returned to office on January 20th, 2025, earlier this year, and a lot of people felt that the Congress had rolled over, the Senate had rolled over, and basically he had the Supreme Court in his back pocket. And now, as we're getting toward the end of the year, these things are starting to change. People are starting to say, wait a second, even Marjorie Taylor Greene, my goodness gracious, who would have suspected she would have been the one to speak out against President Trump? As you said,
I wasn't smart enough to figure, well, she'll turn on him, except I'll say this. Many of the people up there who have been his strongest supporters, once they see that their constituents no longer insist that they be his strongest supporters, they will suddenly discover, well, you know something, I thought all the time, and now I really believe that he's not doing this right. Oh, God bless them, and I mean that, Lord. We change the Supreme Court. There was a cartoonist, I think his name was Dooley, in the 1800s, who said, as a cartoonist, the Supreme Court reads the election returns. And that's true. I mean, people are put on the court because of their certain views by presidents who agree with them and want them to do certain things. And often they do it. But when the worm turns, and that's public opinion, and I don't mean to belittle it by calling it a worm, it's an old expression, you know, again, from the country, then the Supreme Court begins to turn. Hey, wait, Plessy versus Ferguson? You know, it's okay to have different schools, that's all right. And then Brown versus Board of Education, you know it's not. And so that's what we're seeing now. I'm telling you, it's not that I'm so smart with a crystal gaze. I can cite all the reasons why, and the most brilliant one, the latest one, is the Supreme Court telling him you cannot send guardsmen for law enforcement purposes. That is the police and the state police and all of that. The guardsmen are for extreme circumstances of other methods, or rather other means that are necessary. And so when you see that, what's going to happen now with the next two times? Because they didn't do it in Los Angeles. We had over Portland, Oregon, the contraps, the court didn't, you know, the lower judges stepped in, but not the Supreme Court. Now it's the Supreme Court. It's the men on it who are doing it.
Where do we all go from here as we head into 2026 with these changes happening? President Trump wants to get done what he wants to get done. He wants to make decisions that are certainly unlike any other president has ever tried to do, certainly in recent history. What are we going to come to? What's that head going to look like when the rubber meets the road there?
Well, pardon me. I have great confidence now, and always thought it would turn this way, that we will return to some of the basic principles of American democracy, which has always been muddled in extent, never been pure. Always there were people who were not included in the guarantees or the enforcement of laws that would protect them. But we've made progress, and we've tried it in civil rights. We've made progress in my lifetime, a huge amount, from the 30s up to now. But there's more progress to be made. And the liberation of women from being, God bless her, breast Truman, meaning a woman's place is in the kitchen, in the bedroom, and take care of the children, and buy the groceries, and clean the house. Well, those days are long over. So I think we're going to return to those kinds of things, and I think we're going to return to the point where we can't run up and down the street yelling the F word, because now that's okay. No, folks, it's really not okay if you want to have a civil society in which people can get along without virulent attacks, without using the kind of language that they think they can get away with. I think we're coming back to a more stable democracy. It won't happen overnight. I'm not predicting by the end of this coming year we could all say, well, it's all over. No more of not using due process in the prosecution of people suspected of criminality. No more throwing people out of the country without the kind of hearing that the law requires. No more. I think we'll get there eventually. But we'll be making a lot of progress this year toward that goal.
You know, Sam, something that was very interesting here in maybe the last 4 or 5 months, and I've said this before, we live in Jim Jordan's district. We're here in Ohio, which has been a very red state over the last few presidential elections. We voted for Trump every time, even the time he did not win. Yet, all of a sudden, after he got in, the last 4 or 5 months, when the food card was delayed, when prices are not going down in the grocery store, a matter of fact, they're going up on things like coffee and meat and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, people are saying negative things about our president that I haven't heard in this area for quite some time.
Well, that's true, but that always happens. The poor president, whoever he may be, and someday she, takes it in the head when something goes wrong, whether it's his fault or not, whether he has any ability to really change it. I mean, look at the economy. We have an economy now that is difficult to understand. This Christmas season and before, consumers, and I'm a consumer, of course, we're spending like there's no tomorrow. Hey, well, party time. Yet, we're putting it on the credit card more and more. Our debt is growing. That is, individual debt is growing by alarming amounts, although we're spending it right now. Meanwhile, jobs are not being created. People are losing their jobs to artificial intelligence, to Donald J. Trump, and to Elon Musk's effort to purge the government of employees in so many ways. So the facts are not pleasant when it comes to looking at the future this year of our economy. And yet, if you turn around, hey, you have some money in the stock market, Scott. Are you making money there? Everybody's making money in the stock market, even little players, you know, and the huge big boys, I mean, the Magnificent Seven, the multi-billion dollar people, they are really making money. And of course, Donald J. Trump is making money for himself. Yeah. And he's making no bones about it. It's not like, I'll tell you this about the president. When he was running, what he wanted to do, if elected. And he has been saying since, I'm keeping my promises, and that's true. What he promised to do, he's doing it. And so far, people had let him get away with it from the standpoint of saying, well, it's okay with me, or I voted for him. Or now, as you point out, as we talk about, the price of things. I'd much rather think that if people want to turn on Donald J. Trump, it's because of things Christ said, maybe, rather than, hey, I'm paying more for milk, so now I'm going to turn on him. And yet we all do that. I look at our budget here. I'm not one of the billionaires or anywhere close. Just to use that expression with me is silly. But in any event, it's happening. And apparently, continuing, you see nothing from the White House that says, wait a moment, I'm going to reassess my policy. Now, for instance, the Supreme Court is coming up with a very important decision. Later this year, it'll hear the arguments on tariffs. He has decided that as President of the United States, he has the power to impose tariffs across the board to any country as much as he wants, when he wants, changing it and all that. Well, the Constitution does not seem to say that. Congress has always reserved, except in limited circumstances, that power. Well, now we're going to see if the Supreme Court says to him, as it has in the Chicago case, you do not have that power. If it were to do that, talk about our economy being blown up overnight in an effort to try to redistribute, and talk about the rest of the world licking its chops. We got them now. It'll be terrible, but it'll be all, we'll be over it. We'll get over it. I'm really an optimist while saying at the same time we're in for a really deep time as these transitions that I think are coming. because Mr. Trump does not have the capacity to change. He is who he is. Again, that's a fine trait if that's what you like what he is. And if he finds that things are not going his way, I don't believe he and his people at small quartery around him are going to say, well, okay, we tried, we probably were on the wrong track, or even if we think we're on the right track, American people don't want it, so we're going to try. It'll be a dangerous time in which they make one last attempt to make certain that they win. I'm not predicting in the streets gunfire. I'm simply saying it's going to be a time where they're not going to give up easily.
You know, Sam, something that I observed in the last month or two that I thought was one of the strangest press conferences I had ever seen. Mamdani is elected in New York as the mayor, says some horrible things about Trump, says some horrible things about Trump as he's elected. He goes to the White House. They get along very cordially, almost seem to be friendly with each other. The press corps comes in. They start asking questions. And I couldn't believe, you couldn't tell this story. You couldn't make it up. The press says to Mamdani, who's taking questions, Trump's sitting at the desk there in the Oval Office, and he says, you called Trump a fascist. Do you still think he's a fascist? Before Mamdani can answer, Trump speaks up and says, just tell him yes. Just tell him yes. That's what they want to hear. I've never seen anything like that.
Scott, did you hear some of the things that both of them were saying? Mamdani is very smart. I frankly don't know that he's right for New York City or the country, but he's very smart. He came down to Washington praising Donald J. Trump.
Yes.
Praising him. Yes, during his campaign is different. Because the day before the election, Trump endorsed Cuomo again and a losing bid there. If you want to get praise yourself from Donald J. Trump, you have to give it to him first. You have to say, you are wonderful. Well, he loves to hear that, and I would love to hear that too. But the point is, Mamdani took him for Trump, as you point out, after what he said about Mamdani, suggesting that he was not a good person for the city of New York in Trump's view. Suddenly to say he was a wonderful guy is ridiculous. But that's it.
That is it. On a more serious, well, let me touch on Ohio one more second here, because I think this is a real bellwether. We have Vivek Ramaswamy running for governor here. We've had 16 years of Republican governors. We had John Kasich. We have Mike DeWine right now, very prominent people in the Republican Party. Vivek Ramaswamy, Trump's right-hand man. Trump has already endorsed him, and basically here in the state, they've went all in on Ramaswamy. The Republican Party has. Now, he's running against Amy Acton, who got some national attention in regard to the pandemic as being Mike DeWine's right-hand person during the pandemic. Now, this is a woman, also no experience in government. That's our gubernatorial race, essentially. It doesn't look like there's going to be a primary on either side. Now, Vivek Ramaswamy, a national person, a billionaire, and a man in the Republican Party in a very red Ohio. All of a sudden, last week, I think it was, Mike DeWine, our sitting governor, comes out and says, you know, you can't blame Amy Acton for any decision that was made during the pandemic. Those were my decisions. The buck stops here, essentially defending her. And in the same interview says, well, yes, I'll endorse the Republican, but I've got to talk more with Ramaswamy to see if his issues line up with mine. And in the most recent poll, Ramaswamy is behind Amy Acton by a couple points. That's unbelievable. A Trump-endorsed candidate in Ohio, not in the lead as we go into this gubernatorial year?
Well, you got to believe it. Now, by the way, I know both John Kasich and Mike DeWine. When I was a working reporter, they had other jobs. But in Washington, and I got to know them well, and they are the old Republicans. I don't know what I mean by age now. They're the old Republican Party. They're the Republican Party that in the great, also, Trump state recently of Indiana decided, no, we're not going to do what Donald J. Trump wants and redistrict because it's not right. It's not fair. And even though it would give the Republican Party nationally more seats at the table when it comes to a presidential election. We're not going to do it. Well, those two men you mentioned, I think so highly of them, even though I would disagree in some of their policies, too. So, but you see what Mike DeWine is doing now. He wants to remain a Republican. He wants to remain a faithful member of the party. When he wants to resign the party, he'll say so, and he doesn't want to do that. So I think he's between a rock and a hard place on that. But I'll tell you this. You know far more about politics there than in Ohio than I do.
Well, I do want to switch back to national politics just because of your career, long career in broadcast news. What about this story last week about 60 Minutes pulling a story on the abuses of a detention center in El Salvador? And just moments before the broadcast was about to air, hours before, the new CBS News chief did that and said basically more or less that we couldn't get a comment from the Trump camp and that's why we did it. 60 Minutes, what used to be the gold standard in news, Edward R. Murrow and Dan Rather and Walter Cronkite and CBS News. What'd you make of this, Sam?
Well, anyone that believes there was really a concern on the part of the new management of 60 Minutes and of the company because they wanted to be fair to the administration, and they weren't getting, the administration was refusing to give us, and they pulled the segment. Anyone believes that that's the reason? I have land to sell them in the Florida Everglades tomorrow morning. The reason was political. The reason was because of the Elsons. The Elson father and son who are making a bid. Now, it's very complicated, and I'm not sure I understand all the machinations, but making a bid for Warner Brothers Discovery for the $110 billion, and the father's guaranteed for Larry Elson $41.1 billion of his own money to help his son get that done. Now, they have to have permission, of course, from the administration in this fight, to get that permission, you have to deal with one's man, Donald J. Trump. You have to know, you don't go to the people who run this agency or that agency or what have you. You go to the top. And the top says 60 Minutes has been very mean to me because he won a suit against CBS. CBS knuckled, as ABC knuckled, under suits from Donald J. Trump. And so what you saw was, at the last minute, 3 hours before airtime, that segment was pulled to satisfy one man who would then help the Ellison brothers. Mm. That's the way business is done. And the business is done before Trump became president. But this is such a dangerous diminution of the ability of the free press to act freely. And the public would decide whether it was fair or not, ultimately, not the president of the United States. Mm.
What do you make of your old shop, ABC, and some of the decisions they've made with Jimmy Kimmel and settling lawsuits and so on and so forth?
Well, I think I don't know anyone left at ABC News. I mean, they're all dropping around me, poor guys and gals, and I miss them and all of that. So I can't comment on the present management of ABC News, except to say, like we've just discussed with CBS, it has to follow, it believes, and if it wants to stay in place, it's right. It has to follow the dictates of the corporation. We go back to Disney, which still owns ABC. We go back to Bob Iger, a man that I know, when he was coming up the ranks in the corporation that was then owning ABC. I was coming up the ranks of the news department. I liked him. I think he kind of liked me, and so... But what Bob Iger has had to do, and you or any one of us can say he made wrong decisions, was to knuckle under originally to one of Trump's needs, and now has to deal with the consequences of what happens in the news division. It's not just business in news. When I was fortunate in the news division there, and any news division you talk about, the national ones, that division made its own judgments. That division decided what was a story and not a story, running by the lawyers to make certain it was all the legality was there, running by all of the people who commented within the corporation on ethics, and are you doing the right thing? Are you doing the fair thing? Are you presenting facts that you really have? Let me, you know, you watch the movie All the President's Men, and the guy playing Ben Bradley, the great maestro of the Washington Post, is saying to Woodward and Bernstein, you haven't got it. Who's your source? In other words, all that was being done. It was done. So we'd put something on the air and make a mistake, and we'd have to correct it because we didn't have it right, not because we were under pressure from a corporation to make it sound one way or the other, but because we didn't do our job properly. Those days are gone. And the danger to, of course, the country is without a free press. You know, as Thomas Jefferson once said, if I had to choose, I'd take the press. He also said other things about the press. No politician. I don't know what George Washington thought, because there's nothing I could read about that. No politician likes it when he or she is criticized by the press. They always think it's not fair. Don't they understand? I had to do this, or I didn't want to do that because of reasons like this. I'm rambling on, but I think it's very dangerous what's happened to the news business these days, and egged on by Donald J. Trump. Mm. He's called all reporters. He doesn't single them all. He said a few he likes, but they're all bad Americans, just like the Democrats. All Democrats should be expelled from the country. I'm quoting him. So you don't know what to make of it, except we've got to return to a point where the news business can do its job properly, have to back it up and make certain that people understand and see why it is the proper job it's doing, and then be believed. Because if you want to just believe the politicians or people who are outside of a news business because they're making money, then that's the kind of country we'll have, and we won't like it.
I want to switch to healthcare because this is something that's going to impact everybody listening to this program. 22 million people will lose their healthcare subsidies January 1st, I believe, if nothing
is
done.
That's correct.
Now, the Democrats tried to shut down the government to save this. That didn't work out very well. The Republicans say they don't want things to be harder on people, so they've got their own plan, although I don't know that we've seen that yet. President Trump says what he says, but here we are 7 days away from this. What's going to happen? What's likely to happen here? And do the Republicans have a plan?
Let me return to my thesis that public opinion is moving, and public opinion is changing against the kind of policy you've just accurately described. My prediction, therefore, is that once they come back from the Christmas vacation, the two parties will get together and pass something that restores to a large extent the kinds of subsidies, whether you want to call them the ACA, of Affordable Care Act subsidies, I don't care what you call them, to people. We are not going to let... Now, of the 22 million people, some will be able to handle it. Not much, not very well, meaning the increase. But many of those 22 million, we don't have a figure yet, because we haven't seen it happen yet, will not be able to handle it. And they cannot be allowed to go to a prison or a poorhouse. And these members of Congress, no matter what their parties and what their ideology, are going to get together. Not everyone's going to vote for some help. Let them starve. No, I shouldn't say that. It's going to be, they'll soon have it restored. It's, for instance, like student loans. There are millions of students. Hey, I went to college like $230 a semester. I went to a little, you know, college in El Paso, Texas, land grant college. These bright young people have had to pay thousands and thousands of dollars, but they haven't paid them. They're in default. So what's happening now, beginning on the 1st, is that the government is going after their paychecks. It has the ability to get their, if they're working, Social Security money, to make that money come back to help reduce the loan. Well, that's got to be handled. We're not going to allow that to happen either. Some of these policies that have been so draconian in the way of changing what you've just described in the way of health care, some of these policies are going to be rescinded or going to be changed in a way that will be better for the people who now fear that they can't meet their bills.
We'd be remiss if we didn't get into this story, because it's been the main focus of seemingly most newscasts and most periodicals the last few days since
Epstein.
Friday. You got it. You got it. My goodness.
Are you still talking about Epstein?
I'll tell you.
Donald Trump said that several months ago, thinking somehow he could dismiss it. No, you can't.
Well,
and we are going to know the facts at the end of the day. I don't mean today. It's just like Nixon. It's just like any cover-up. It's just like it's being exposed. And the public is demanding it. The reason he had to sign the bill that required the Justice Department to turn over every bit of the information it has, with very few redactions, and never to protect the identity of some well-known person, by last Friday midnight. What is today? Today's Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday.
And guess what? It's dribbling out. The Justice Department is dribbling out by day, but it has not complied with the law. That's a law. The President of the United States signed it. Both parties in the House contributed to it passing the House and the Senate. And so I point this out in those declaratory terms. Folks are waking up to the fact that this administration has felt no problem in just disobeying a law. A judge will say, yeah, you disobeyed the law here, but it hasn't gone to the Supreme Court yet, and we'll do what we want to do. Here this poor guy, who was being deported. He is an illegal alien in this country, months ago, remember? And the judge said, don't do this, I'm staying this. But judge, he's on an airplane. And so the judge said, stop the airplane. I'm ordering it to come back. Well, they didn't stop the airplane. They could do whatever they want. Frankly, after months of wrangling, he is back. And the government, once he was released from the latest problem, said, we're going to reindict him. We're going to take him into custody again. Once again, lower court said, no, you're not. Don't you understand? He has not had due process under the law that's provided him, and he must have that before you can deport him. And they don't want to do it. It's amazing, but one of the reasons is fading that they don't want to do it. They believe that the American public, including Donaldson, who says, I don't think people should be here illegally, love it. But no, the American public doesn't love it when children, when people are seized in their house of worship by masked men saying, we're ICE, we're from the government. They don't love it.
I want to make this point on the Epstein files and get your thoughts on it, because you were there during President Clinton, and he certainly has got the brunt of the Epstein files drip this past weekend. Former President Bill Clinton is now calling for all the files to be revealed. He doesn't like what's going on, all these pictures of him being released with Michael Jackson and Diana Ross and so on and so forth. What do you make of the reemergence of Bill Clinton this past weekend, thanks to the Epstein files photos that have been released?
Well, I have no problem with the Justice Department releasing all of the information, all of the people, particularly people who under the law I'm talking about, cannot be properly redacted. We must know who they are. I have no problem if one of them is Bill Clinton, and he will have to explain what his position was and was not with Jeffrey Epstein. The problem is with the people whose names are being redacted. I'm not talking about the children and the young women who were abused, who were criminally abused. I'm talking about they clearly are redacting people. Well, Donald J. Trump, they've released now. They've released a lot of his doings with Epstein, but are they still concealing some? When you see those black pages and all the newscasts of what they're not releasing and why, it's clear they are not obeying the law. They are not just redacting the names and pictures of people who, under the law, yes, we don't want to expose them. They have no right to be accused of wrongdoing when they were the victims. But I want all of those pictures, including Bill Clinton's, released. But when the government, immediately in its first two waves of release, released 100 pictures of Bill Clinton, but maybe not the others, well, you know what that's about, don't you? I mean, that's get those Democrats. See if we can make the country believe it was all Democrats. Their jig is up. More and more people see this. The American public is what Abraham Lincoln said. You cannot fool all of the people all of the time.
Sam, a couple more questions here. You covered President Clinton and were still in the news business when some of this business was going on. Were you aware of this guy Epstein, that he was around?
I never heard of him. Hey, guys, if you have a picture of me with Epstein, release it, because I'm 100% certain. I never heard of him. And so many of us didn't, who are political reporters. You say, well, why not? We now know in 1996, it was a young woman who had come forward, wanted the FBI to investigate. Why didn't you know? Sorry, folks. I was frying other fish. I only heard of him recently. Don't ask me what year. I suddenly recognized there was this guy named Epstein, and there was a big problem with him and his girlfriend. What is her name? She's been moved to a very nice little country club prison now by the Justice Department. I think many reporters were in the same boat with me. And although some, we know, were digging at this story, there's always some people in the press who find something that nobody else finds and says, this should be exposed. That's why we want a free press. Go for it. If you've got something, we want to see it. But it does not amaze me that this is not done and that they were able to cover up. These kinds of cover-ups never work. When the public becomes... And it was, you recall, during his campaign, was Donald J. Trump himself who was saying, when I'm elected, we're going to erase all this stuff on Jeffrey Epstein. He regrets that, as he soon did regret it, and then changed and said, well, I don't think we can't do that. Innocent people will be hurt.
Sam, one more thing I want to touch on here this morning. This was an interesting moment last week. White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles gave an interview in which she said apparently President Trump has the personality of an alcoholic and Vice President J.D. Vance is a conspiracy theorist. She said some other things. She's kind of denied them, walked them back now. Why would she do this? She knew she was being recorded. She knew it was an interview. No matter what she says, why did she say these things?
I don't know. I don't know her. I've never met her. And until she became the president's chief of staff, although she was instrumental in his campaigns, I never heard of her. But you ask me the question. The question is because she's not very smart about public relations, about what reporters are all about. A reporter comes to you, Scott, and says, Scott, I've admired your radio program. I've admired what you've been doing. I'd like to do a big feature on you. I'd like to talk about your all that, you might say, okay. But you wouldn't start saying about your boss, well, he's got an apartment, he's an alcoholic personality. You wouldn't, even though you wouldn't do that. You're smarter than that. She was dumb. And now she's paying the price, although he has no choice but to stick with her. My first thought, well, he'll fire her. And then I realized, no. She does know where the bodies are buried. He is not going to fire her and call her a name because she talked about him that way. She's got a permanent job for life with Donald J. Trump.
Sam, so in the final analysis here, before we run out of time, with health care subsidies getting ready to expire, something we think will be done there. President Trump wants to do what he wants to do. Public opinion is shifting. Where are we headed in 2026?
I think we're headed up. By up, I mean back toward democratic ideals, back toward the rule of law, back toward an administration that will have no choice but to ease some of the draconian measures it's taking to change America to another America, one that maybe never existed. But so many of the people around Mr. Trump, and they make no bones about it in a sense, want the country to go back to what they see as a white Christian country. Well, it's not going to happen. We're a pluralistic society, and to be in this world today of 8 billion people, 11% of whom are white, just 11%, 8 billion people, is foolhardy, suicidal. So it's not going to happen. I think we're in for better times. And, of course, as looking at my pocketbook, I hope we're in for better times when it comes to the use of one's money. I'd like to buy milk less. And I know what the price of milk is because I do a lot of the shopping here. Sandy's got some health problems, and my wife, that I try to help her out on. So, but I think it's going to be better. I think it really is. Yet we'll go through that period of more danger when they try to hold on to their ability to do anything they want. And I think that ability is gone.
And because it's Christmas Eve, with 30 seconds left to go, Sam, do you have a Christmas message for our listening audience out there?
Well, I wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I feel warmer toward my people that I don't like. I mean, Christ said, forgive 70 times, not just seven, to imitate the God's giving to people. And so I kind of feel the same way, that this is Wednesday. On the 1st of January, I'll go back to business as usual. I'm just as much a backslider as anyone.
Sam, it was great to start Christmas Eve morning with you, and I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday.
Back at you, Scott.
Thank you, Sam. Bye-bye. The legendary Sam Donaldson. All right, we'll be back. Christmas Eve morning continues right after this.
Out the holly, put up the tree.